Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, today we are celebrating. We talk a lot on this show about the importance of taking notice, of being awake and paying attention, not just mindlessly going through the day, about being proactive and living with purpose. And part of that mindfulness, of course, includes taking time to celebrate our accomplishments and to recognize others. And so today is that day for us because it's our 7th anniversary, live on air. And of course, that doesn't happen in a vacuum. First of all, I want to thank you listening today for, you know, participating in this and the comments that you send. And, you know, when I get to see listeners, it's always such a wonderful, fabulous treat. My main right-hand man here, Eric Ryder, could not do this without you, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure every week to start off my week, really, with you, Vicki, and this show. And the last 7 years, it's gone by like that.
Hasn't it?
But time flies when you're having fun, as they say. And yeah. That was definitely the case with these last 7 years.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, Eric and I have actually worked together for 10 years because I used to be affiliated with Positive Choice Talk Radio before.
That's true.
I had my own show. So. But yeah, 7 years, you know, we're just a 1 hour weekly show. I think we have to pat ourselves on the back here because it's not easy to keep it going. I work full time. I'm a writer, producer and consultant. So, you know, this is in addition to my regular 40 to 70 hour week. But I just love doing it. And I love working with you, Eric. And I appreciate everything you do, especially when I throw things at you at the last minute. My week's gone crazy and I didn't get stuff to you when I meant to.
So. Well, you know, I never mind because I know that we're working towards something that I think a lot of our listeners really enjoy. And that's a real payoff in my mind. You know,
I appreciate it. You're always so professional and it's just a treat. It's very rare to find truly professional people these days, let me tell you. I also want to give a shout out to David Vanver, who writes our web copy and updates all that stuff on a weekly basis and yells at me when I don't get stuff in on time. He does it. So I always tell him, David, if you don't have what you need from me, yell. He never yells. He politely reminds me. And David, if you're listening today, I know you had to work and couldn't join us, but I do appreciate everything you've done, too. And David's been with us for over 2 years. So what we're going to do today, I was trying to think, you know, what can we do? Do I want to play my favorite shows, my favorite guests, books, stories? And it's been 2 years since my best friend, my mentor, my biggest supporter passed away. And that, of course, was my mom. I hope I can say this without tearing up here. I can feel myself going already. But, you know, such a loss to me. And yet you can't look at the loss. You have to look at the contribution she made. And this was a woman who truly loved her kids unconditionally, good or bad. She loved us unconditionally. My friends all thought she was perfect because they'd hear these stories about her. She was far from perfect and she would not like anyone to say she was perfect. She had quite a feisty temper, let me tell you. Which never dissipated, but that's what made her who she was. She was a huge supporter of everything that I do, that my brother and sister do, and so I decided to dedicate the show to her and pull together some clips from women who are going out there and doing what my mom always told me to do, and that is to follow your own heart, listen to your instinct. My dad told me that too. Listen to your instinct and, you know, create your own lifestyle. Don't follow the crowd. And I think every single one of our guests today has done that. So I pulled together some clips and God bless him, Eric rapidly edited them very quickly on a very short time frame. And so we're going to bring some of those to you today. And we're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, we will play our first clip for you. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
More choices, more topics, more shows. One station. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, our special 7th year anniversary show today. Glad that was right down my ear.
Sorry, that's our party horns.
Was I not
awake? Celebrating,
was
yes.
I not awake enough for you? That was good. Thank you, Eric. So I said I'm dedicating this show to my mom. Very strong woman. I come from a chain of very strong women, but I also have to remember my dad here because he died 12 years ago on the very day that we started our show. I wonder if he had a little nudge there. I don't know, but as he was passing away, he squeezed my hand and said, "Don't let this get in your way. Do not let this stop you living life, Vicky." And I remember that often. And, I know from talking with people who've lost loved ones, it's not always easy for people. And my first clip I'm playing is from a woman who says that after losing her best friend, her husband and partner in life, 57-year-old Linda Krill spent 18 months following one-size-fits-all advice, as she called it. And it just wasn't working for her. She was miserable. She was feeling worse by day. She couldn't shake that feeling of, is this all there is from now on? She'd lost the life she loved. And most of all, she'd lost herself. So one day, in a fit of rebellion, this former Fortune 100 executive changed out of her Halston designer dresses. And for the first time in her life, she donned leather. She jumped on a Harley. She rode 2,500 miles down the Pacific coast. So we're going to bring you a clip from her book. She wrote about that in a book called Blind Curves, One Woman's Unusual Journey to Reinvent Herself and Answer What Now?
there are so many people who have lost someone that they love, and you know that there's a period of mourning that will be there afterwards. And since he had a terminal form of cancer that with no survivalship, we weren't surprised that he did not make it more than 11 months after being diagnosed. So I expected to mourn him, and I think American society teaches us that a year later we should be up and ready to go. At least that's what I thought, that I would be back into life. I would always miss him, always love him dearly. We had one of those very, very special marriages. But what I didn't know is that actually I not only had to mourn the loss of my husband, but I had to mourn the loss of the old Linda. She was no longer there. So many things that had made sense when he was alive didn't make sense when he wasn't there. The way I cooked was the way he liked to eat because mm-hmm. he had Crohn's disease and couldn't eat spicy foods. And so I still, a year later, was cooking without onions or garlic. And there were so many aspects of our social life that I thought I was independent. I thought I was on my own. But I suddenly realized so many of those activities were dependent on the two of us for different phases of them. So I really had to reinvent myself.
Right. We do tend to, as you say, create this bubble around ourselves, you know, and who we are and where our life fits in the bigger scheme of things. When your husband died and you go through this period of mourning, and as you said, you know, everybody expects you to be up and jumping after 12 months and even sooner. But you were still feeling pretty cruddy and you got to a point where you realized, you know, treading gently, being kind to myself, taking care of myself. Yes, I have to do this, but it's not working.
Right. 18 months after he had left. And the irony of it is that I was a managing change consultant. I worked with Fortune 100 companies on how to bring about change. And so I had tried all the things I would have used on my corporate customers to try to rebuild life. But when you're brainstorming about what to do next, and you're only coming out of this bubble of who you've been, and you don't know who you can become yet, all the ideas I would come up for with what I could do next weren't things that lit my fire. I couldn't passionately follow them. Mm-hmm. So I tried new things, but I was really disappointed. And I said to myself, at some point, you've got to do something completely different, because Einstein had the famous quote that a lot of us use that says, insanity is doing more of the same and expecting different results.
Right, right. And so at some point, you go to lunch with an old friend and you're telling him, you know, I think you'd had a phone call with your brother and your sister and brother-in-law, and he'd said at the end of it, take care of yourself, and you kind of unloaded on him a little.
Well, it was amazing. We Americans love to give each other advice, and especially women love to give other women advice. And when they know you're not happy, everybody would tell me, make sure you're eating, sleeping, and getting plenty of exercise. And I would always look at everybody who said that to me and say, thank you, as if I hadn't been told it 8 times before that same evening. And I just thank them, because nobody knows what to say to a widow. So I had been told this to death. So my poor brother-in-law, it's that Chinese water torture, is when he finally said it to me, I blew up at him and said, no way, no one has ever overachieved it following this advice, and it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So I said, what's the most opposite thing I could think of? And in just a fit of rebellion, I threatened to learn to ride a motorcycle. And then next day, had lunch with a friend, and he said, how are you doing? And I said, it's not coming back together. In fact, I even threatened to learn to ride a motorcycle.
And then he says...
And then he says to me, he starts to laugh. He's a corporate executive heading a business. And he says to me, Linda, don't you know I organize motorcycle trips all over the world, and groups of us fly to these foreign countries. And in 2 months, we're flying to Vancouver, Canada. We're going to do the coast on motorcycles, on Harleys. We're going to Victoria Island. Then we're going down Washington, Oregon, Northern California, through the wine country, back up through the middle of Washington State. Normally, there's 6 to 8 of us. This time, there's only 4. And the woman that was going with her husband, he can't go, and she can't go unless we can find a woman motorcycle rider. We need you.
Right. Now, had you even been on the back of a motorcycle at that point?
I think when I was maybe in high school, I rode the back of a motorcycle a couple of times. But to me, I was a bicyclist. I bicycle all the time, and I'm a tree hugger, and I'm a greenie. And so the idea of motorcycles were those noisy things that disturb everybody's peace. And to me, it was the last thing I thought I would ever do.
Right. So you did go to learn, you did take this journey, lots and lots and lots of lessons along the way. you know, I think the first lesson was you've actually failed your test, you said, and you'd only got, you had such a short time to prepare for this trip.
Well, it was very, I would never recommend anybody do what I've done. In fact, it's fun when I meet men that are very, very good motorcyclists, and they said, I couldn't have done this. But 30 days before the journey, because I waited 30 days before I decided to go for sure, I sat on a motorcycle for the first time. So I actually flew out and began this journey with less than 30 days of riding experience. And, yes, I did fail the Harley Learn to Ride 3-day course, and I failed the next 3 days at the DMV trying to get my motorcycle license. It took me 4 tries before I finally passed. But that's where another very big surprise happened to me. We say pamper yourself, you know, take care of yourself. Actually, the day I passed that motorcycle exam on the 4th day was the happiest day I had had since my husband had died.
I can believe that.
And we don't think about that, but when we go into something we think we can't do and we stick with it, and when we are finally given the reward of, yes, you've made it, the joy that comes at that moment, and this is the opposite of pampering, was actually finding out that I could trust Linda again. She could do something hard. She could fail, and she didn't crumble. Right. She stuck in there, and she could do it again. And this learning to trust ourselves after life has given us, and I don't mean just for widows. It happens to all of us at different phases of our life where we lose a job or our health has declined or something. When we find out we can trust ourselves again and we can trust ourselves to hang in there, there's a real feeling of elation that comes.
Yeah, and here's what I love about the fact that you did fail and you just kept retaking it till you passed is so many people would have said, oh, well, the universe is telling me this isn't meant to be.
Well, you know what I said? I said, I have stood on the gates of hell. This is not even close.
Mm.
In other words, I've seen someone suffering, you know, trying to cling on to life day by day. And when I, after I failed, yeah, the night I failed the test, I was very, very depressed, very downhearted. But the thing is, when I woke up the next morning, I said, you know, after all I've been through, this is just a silly motorcycle lesson. And if I fail it, I'll just go and rent a convertible and drive along with the people in a convertible behind them. I don't have to be on a motorcycle.
Right, right.
So I immediately thought of a plan B, and I kept a plan B. Even when I flew out there, the group and I had agreed that if I could not keep up, if it were too scary, if it were too difficult, I would just park the motorcycle and rent a car.
There you go.
Thank God. Of course, if you know my personality, hell would have to freeze over before I would willingly want to admit that. But
I believe that, too.
Always when you're trying something new and that's out of your range of comfort, you have to know what are some backup plans.
Right. One of the things I picked up from the book, you said that on this journey, you very quickly learned, hey, I need to quit giving myself a daily report card.
That's true. We all somehow or another get so hungry for, did I do well enough? Did I achieve? And when you're learning something new, you know, whether it's a foreign language, whether it's learning accounting, whether it's learning to ride a bicycle or a motorcycle, there are some days that you just do not do well. And when we're sitting there trying to decide each day, am I doing well enough? We're really hard on ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And that was Linda Carell. I nearly swallowed the microphone then. That was Linda Carell. And I loved her story because, you know, so many times we are told just, you know, take care of yourself. And sometimes adventure is the best thing you can do for yourself. Her book, again, is called Blind Curves, One Woman's Unusual Journey to Reinvent Herself and Answer What Now? You can find out more about her at lindacarell.com. Please stay with us. When we come back, we'll be hearing from some more amazing women from the past year. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
A celebration to last throughout the years. So bring your good times.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services, if you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to best practitioner Dr. Nels Rasmussen, we cover the world of animals. This week, August 3rd, it's Seafair Sunday, and Animal World will be stepping aside to make room for exclusive live coverage of the Albert Lea Appliance Cup. That's right, we'll be taking the day off as the hydros race by and the Blue Angels fly over. You can catch all the live action right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Coverage begins at 10 a.m.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Find out about upcoming shows at conversationslive.net.
1150 KKNW.com, your connection to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
It's a celebration.
And welcome back, everybody. Thank you for celebrating with us today for our seventh anniversary with Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Thank you, Eric. And this particular show, we're celebrating strong women who are making a difference, but more particularly women who are following their own path and making a difference along the way doing that. And my next guest is no exception. Her name is Tess Cacciatore. And she co-founded the Global Women's Empowerment Network, known as GWEN. She provides expert insight into really pressing social issues such as human trafficking, bullying, domestic and sexual violence. She's been featured in the New York Times, the LA Times, Chicago Tribune. She's been on the Today Show, Primetime, with John Stossel. I mean, she's really out there doing a lot of work and raising a lot of awareness on a subject that many people don't want to talk about. And so I wanted to bring, you know, we're celebrating. This is not a great, happy subject, but she's doing amazing work and we need to hear about it and we need to raise the net awareness amongst the younger women in our lives, and not just women, but also men are affected by this too. I'm going to bring you a clip with Tess Cacciatore here. The mission statement of the Global Women's Empowerment Network is to harness the power of technology and multimedia to connect and empower those suffering from abuse. So many problems with this on so many levels. First of all, I have an issue with the word trafficking because it does not really imply, to me, trafficking does not say what this is all about. It's about slavery. It's about sex slavery a lot. So talk to us. Do you think that word needs to be changed? I mean, I just think people gloss over it too easily.
I absolutely think the word should be changed. It's a very good point, Vicki, because we do need to really bring awareness around that, because you think human trafficking and sex trafficking, most people will think, especially in the United States, oh, that's happening in India and Asia and other countries. It doesn't happen in our own backyard. But over 300,000 young children are abducted on an annual basis in the United States. And these are the statistics that we have to shift. And having the FBI doing the bus last week is a huge first step. Right. So it's about bringing awareness, but I'd love to see that word change so it actually adds more weight to it so we can be aware that this is a serious situation.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't represent the gravity of the crime. You know, in case listeners are thinking, well, you know, Seattle's not really hit by this. I said at the top of the hour that the Seattle Police Department said that we get around 500 teens a day forced into sex slavery. And some of those are as young as 12 years old. And then worldwide, as many as 2 children per minute are enforced into sex slavery. And some of those are as young as 5 years old.
Well, it's really interesting to hear the stories of the women that come to Gwen Network for support and for community and for communication. We have a young woman that we're dealing with that's in her 40s now, and she is out of Illinois, but she was raised in Iowa, and at the age of 4, it was even happening within her own family. She was raped by a family member, and the mother would sell her to the men in town. So she grew up in a house like everyone would see in the normal community. Oh, there's the XX family. They're just, you know, having dinner, and they're going to church, and they're doing this, but no one knows what's happening behind closed doors. So right now, we get to really wake up to our own awareness and our own concern for our community members, and let's keep our awareness out there because it is happening in cities like Seattle and Iowa and in Des Moines, Iowa, and all that. It's just it's crazy what's going on out there.
Yeah, well, the FBI ran a sting, a raid a week or so back, and I think it was last Monday, if I'm not mistaken, but it was a week or so back anyway. But They got in over 100 kids and well over 100 pimps on that raid. And some of those were actually from here in the Northwest: Everett, Federal Way, Kirkland, Lakewood, Renton, Seattle, Tacoma, Tukwila. Just shocking that this is going on, you know, in our neighborhoods and even maybe next door. What should we... Your work is so much about not instilling fear, but instilling empowerment. And one of the things that I came across in my research, and I don't know if you'll agree with this, so I'll just put this out there. One person who does this a lot says that 90% of the kids, because they're not always girls, they're sometimes boys too, who 90% of them who are enslaved this way have had some kind of abuse in their family, and mostly sexual abuse. But I came across stories of really seemingly well-adjusted kids who grew up in you know, nice neighborhoods with caring parents and went to the best schools. So give me your take on, you know, what kind of child is typical.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with regard to that they've had some sort of abuse, and maybe it's not as drastic as sexual abuse, but verbal abuse. The things that we say to our children, the things that we say to each other, from a parent to a child, it really embeds in a very deep psychological level. And sometimes they're not able to really lift out of it, even though from the exterior you look fine and happy and your family looks like the Leave It to Beaver clan. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's what's happening behind closed doors.
And that was a clip from an interview with Tess Cacciatore of Gwen, the Global Women's Empowerment Network. You can find more about the amazing work that they are doing at gwennetwork.org. An important conversation to have, even though it's definitely not a fun subject. Nobody wants to hear about it, but it's a very important conversation for us to have. Please do stay with us. When we come back, we're going to lighten the mood a bit. We're going to talk about the spine of the continent with Mary Ellen Hannibal. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair on our special 7-year anniversary show.
There's a party going on right here, a dedication to last throughout the year.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate, making a difference, one word at a time.
For the people, by the people. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. The next clip I'm going to play is with Mary Ellen Hannibal. She's a widely acclaimed author, writer, and editor focused on science and culture. And again, this is a woman who has crafted her own lifestyle, her own career. She won the National Association of Science Writers, Science and Society Award and Stanford's Knight Rissa Prize for Western Environmental Journalism for coverage of The Path of the Pronghorn, which she wrote about in her previous book. She's written many articles for The New York Times, Esquire, Elle, Scientific America, Outside, etc. And her latest book, or at least when we spoke with her last year or this year, was The Spine of the Continent, and it reports on the social, geographical, and scientific effort to save nature along the Rocky Mountains. Very intense, huge, huge project. It's the largest project ever undertaken on a conservation level. And we joined Mary Ellen Hannibal when she was down in Mexico. So we're going to bring that clip to you right now.
For more than 20 years, Sherry Tippy has relocated beaver from where they are not welcome to where they are wanted. And she started out by, she used to be an Arthur Murray dancer, and she was ironing her dress one night listening to the CBS News, and there was a golf course where a beaver was cutting down the giant trees, and the golf course manager was going to have the beaver exterminated. And she called up and she said, don't kill the beaver. You can just move the beaver. I saw it on National Geographic. And they said, well, you can come and take the beaver if you want. So she did, and she's been doing it ever since. And so it's the story is people who, it is, yes, government efforts, huge places like the Nature Conservancy making, you know, kind of these enormous corporate efforts to help save nature. But maybe even more importantly, Vicki, regular people who are just seeing the right thing to do to help keep nature's connections in place.
Right. Now, let me just go back a second, because you talked about these scientists, these hardened scientists. You know, they are very black, very white, who were moved to tears by this. You know, so many people say, well, extinction is just part of evolution. It's happened, you know, since day one, and it's going to continue to happen. How do you respond to that?
Well, thank you for bringing that up. It's a very important distinction to make. There is what's called a background rate of extinction. And species come and go on this earth, but typically a species will last about 2 million years before going extinct. Now, to put that in a little bit of perspective, what we call Homo sapiens, what we think of as humans, have only been around for at most 200,000, 300,000 years. So we haven't been here very long compared to 2 million years.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening now is that the rate of extinction is going faster than that background rate of extinction. And in my book, for people who are interested in the science, I do explain exactly what the kind of formula and measurements are for figuring out this rate of extinction. It's very interesting, based on the theory of island biogeography, which in turn was inspired by Charles Darwin's work in the Galapagos. And it all fits together because the island idea is that the smaller and farther away from a mainland an island is, the quicker species will go extinct. Because there's two things that happen. Species live and they go naturally extinct, but newcomers come to a place and replenish the population. And so what's happening now is that we're creating islands out of our natural areas through human development, and we're making these natural places smaller and smaller and farther away from big wild areas. And what the result is a rate and magnitude of extinction that is very closely reaching pace with the mass extinctions that gave it, that took out the dinosaurs, for example. And we're at a very critical moment in time where we have the capacity to stop this incursion on how natural extinction goes. But we're not stopping ourselves fast enough. And part of it is we need to protect these large areas of wilderness where we still have them.
Right, and these would be places like Yellowstone National Park.
Yes, but here's an example of the grizzly bear example. So there's about 660 grizzly bears in Yellowstone, and there's about 26,000 up in the Canadian wilderness in the west. And for the grizzly bears in Yellowstone to continue to be a viable population, they have to be connected genetically all the way up to that big population in Canada. It's like a relay race mm-hmm. where one kind of group of population trades its genes with other populations to keep from inbreeding, because inbreeding depression is one of the things that causes extinction. So we need to connect Yellowstone all the way up to that Canadian wilderness. And a lot of what these ecologists who specialize in corridors or connectivity do is they go and they try to identify, well, where are the real important places where we can connect Yellowstone to the Selkirk Mountains, and then connect the Selkirks and the Bitterroots, and then go make these connections all the way up to Canada. And so it doesn't mean that there's no development in the future. It means we have to be more mindful about where we put the development, identify where are the critical linkages between wild places, and protect those.
And that book was a great read. Mary Ellen Hannibal, the author, the science journalist, and the book called The Spine of the Continent. And Mary said, I have a feeling that if we don't help Mother, if we don't, take care of this now, that Mother Nature, of course, will have the last word. And I would agree with her. And, you know, do we want that to happen on our watch? I don't. All right, so we are going to talk now. We're going to change up again the pace, but we're going to talk now with somebody who, again, has created her own unique lifestyle. She had a little gift shop and is also a writer and speaker. And since I'm a writer, I had to include one writer in here, right? And Tina Welling is my guest. Everything we know about creating, she says, we know intuitively from the natural world. She's the author of Cowboys Never Cry and two other novels, and her nonfiction has appeared in Body and Soul and a variety of anthologies. And she joined me to talk about her three-step spirit walk to enliven and inspire our creativity. Her new nonfiction book is Writing Wild, Forming a Creative Partnership with Nature. But you begin your book with the story of a hike to Josie's Ridge on Snow King Mountain, and far from being just a regular hike that day, you had somewhat of an awakening. Tell us about that day, if you would.
All right, I will. I was just standing there at the mountain, kind of getting my bearings, and there had been cloud cover that day, so it was a little darkish for the moment, but there were just big clouds kind of floating by. And as I stood there, the clouds moved, and the sun came out, and suddenly this tree that I was standing before just was totally lit up with a spider web that had just really encompassed the entire tree. The tree itself was a little unique. It was a dead tree, but it was very big, flowing tree, whereas in the high altitude here, we tend to have tall, sturdy, compact sorts of trees, you know. And so that was unique in itself. But suddenly the sun just lit up this spider web. It was like it was all strung with fairy lights. And I just had this sort of momentary realization that our creative energy is connected with that of the natural world. The sun disappeared behind another cloud, and so I began to doubt myself like we do when we just have something pop into our minds uh-huh. like that, you know. But it was strong enough that I wanted to follow through on it and just get it all sorted out.
So how did you go about following through and sorting this out in your own mind, Tina?
Well, I had been writing and journaling, and I live in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, so I had been daring myself to get out in the mountains and hike down the canyons when I was not really of that nature to begin with. I had a business here in Jackson Hole, a resort business and a family, and that took my life over quite a bit at times. So I followed those desires to get this figured out, and I did a lot of reading. I spent a lot of time outside. I did a lot of writing, just asking myself questions about what is this about creative energy and why does it feel so enlivening to us and how come I do seem to access it more readily when I'm outside. So I eventually, and it took some time, got it down into three simple steps that I could remember and I could follow, and I could pass them on to students that began coming my way, writing students and journal keeping students.
And that was Tina Welling, and we talked about those three steps in a full interview, which you can find, of course, on conversationslive.net. You can find out more about Tina at her website and the work that she does, tinawelling.com. And I really liked this book. It's a book that I'm going to go back and visit. It's something that anyone, I think, in the creative field or even in the business world, because you have to be a lot, you have to be very creative in business these days, would probably get a lot from. And I agree with her. Nature is the place for me where I get my inspiration. So coming up next, I wanted to feature two people. I love this story because, you know, we have two amazing women who could have taken traditional routes with their career paths. One of them was in a super prestigious job with the Smithsonian, but they were both so passionate about a subject that they separately, because they didn't know each other at this point, that they created their own jobs, which then led them to each other and culminated in a solid working relationship between these two women, raising awareness with National Geographic, traveling around the country, in fact, around the world, talking about this subject that they're so passionate about. And the first clip I'm going to play with you for you is a clip from a segment, an interview I did with Dr. Laurie Marker. She's the recipient of the Tyler Prize for Environmental Achievement. It's considered the Nobel Prize for the environment, so this is how highly she is regarded. She's also received the gold medal from the Society of Women's Geographers, the Lowell Thomas Award from the Explorers Club, the Tech Museum's Intel Environmental Prize, and the list just goes on. She has dedicated her life to this subject. She's been many times on television. She's featured, as I said, the Smithsonian, National Geographic. And the book that she put together with the guest who follows is called A Future for Cheetahs. So we'll bring Dr. Laurie Marker on. We'll play you that little clip first of all, and then I'll bring you the second person I was talking about who works with her. So yeah. What have been some of the biggest challenges for you as a woman?
Well, I think that's very interesting. And as I moved into Namibia, the farmers, ranchers that I was talking to were all men. And I think a lot of it, and being a woman and also being an American, which I think is quite interesting. So, I mean, I was viewed from a variety of different angles. But as a scientist, I think I won the hearts and souls as well, mm-hmm. because I was trying to talk about practicalities. I was trying to get to the bottom of things. And understanding is, I started talking to the ranchers about some of the reproductive problems, the genetic problems that the cheetah had, and started looking at the wildlife management initiatives that could be incorporated into their landscape so that they would not have livestock losses. Yeah, they started really embracing me much more. Being a woman, I mean, I started with a old beat-up Land Rover and today have a 100,000-acre huge integrated ranch with the model farm with livestock, goats, sheep, cattle, wildlife everywhere, cheetahs, leopards, hyenas. It's integrated, and we're a training center. We train people from throughout Namibia and around the world in these kinds of systems that I think are going to be the models to actually change the world where we are today. But I started with an old Land Rover, and I drove door-to-door talking with farmers. And so I just think of my car breaking down, and, you know, we're on dirt roads, and how much use I get out of my car at this point and other cars. But now I've gone, you know, we're a $2 million operation with, I've got over 90 people working for me and the cheetah. And kids are going to university, and they're being graduated and becoming the scientists of Africa. And that is a pretty amazing story over a 25-year period. And they keep saying, you know, now, I mean, it's just, they call me the cheetah lady.
And that's Dr. Lori Marker talking about her unique approach involving everybody in this effort to conserve cheetahs, which, of course, are in danger of becoming extinct. And she founded the Cheetah Conservation Fund. It is a recognized 4-star charity, which I think is important to know for people who want to contribute, because so many charities out there, the money doesn't get where it's supposed to. It definitely does in this one. You can find out more about Dr. Lori Marker and the work she's doing herself and with National Geographic at cheetah.org. So I wanted to bring on the photographer who worked with her, and she is a professional wildlife photographer based in California and specializes in documenting the family lives of endangered species. She's particularly well known for her work with newborns. And I thought this was an amazing story, because this kind of tells how these two women came together. And if you just make a little effort and step outside your comfort zone, you know, the changes you can make in your life. And we're going to hear from Susie Esterhaz right now. How did you find this project? You said you really created it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about that.
Well, it's true. So I basically, when I was much younger, I had the opportunity to work in the Serengeti and absolutely fell in love with cheetahs. And I, when I came back to the United States, I decided that I wanted to do a project that followed cheetah cubs from sort of infancy to adulthood. And I really sort of had the idea of doing this as a magazine story. And I looked up Lori Marker, obviously, because she was the world's leading expert on cheetahs. And I made connections with her, and we decided that we would work together on the project. And it went from being a magazine story to a book project, as we just sort of found that it was getting more in-depth than we had planned, and we both really connected as people and as creative partners. So we decided to do this book together. So I essentially just, I had this start where I was at the time having to do a day job, and I had saved a bunch of money for this project, and I decided when I got an email from a contact in the Serengeti, I had sort of a scout on the ground working, got an email, you know, we have some cheetah cubs out, and I just decided to change my life completely and quit the day job, drained my savings account, put all my stuff in storage, got rid of the apartment, and just basically flew over to Africa to start this project. And I kind of thought I would do, you know, small pieces, like a couple weeks here and there. But what I wound up doing is from that day forward, I wound up staying for the vast majority of almost 3 years in a little bush camp in the Maasai Mara in Kenya.
Well, that's just amazing. This book is amazing. The photograph's amazing. And the story is amazing in the book. So what was it that got you interested in photography? You said you had a day job. What was your day job, and what got you interested in photography?
Well, photography has always been my goal ever since I was a kid. So I was just one of those weird kids that knew exactly what I wanted to do with my life. You know, and I was walking around as like a six-year-old saying I was going to live in a tent in Africa. So yeah, it just definitely was the goal. And, you know, wildlife photography is not something that you can just sort of, when you graduate from college, say, I'm going to go get a job as a wildlife photographer. You need to sort of have a day job and you know, break into the field very slowly. So, so anyway, it was definitely something that was planned all along. And my day job was I worked as a PR director at an SPCA, so it was very animal-focused, but certainly not cheetahs and not photography.
And that was photographer Susie Esterhaz, who now has built her reputation as an international professional wildlife photographer. Her images now have appeared all over the world, Time, Smithsonian, BBC Wildlife, National Geographic, Scientific American. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And that, if you listen to the clip before, tells how those two women came together, just because they both stepped out of their comfort zone. And I love stories like that. And not only that, they're doing real good in the world. Eric Ryder, we made it.
We did.
We had a... you had a little rush this morning putting that together, and I really appreciate it.
No problem.
And
no problem.
As always, awesome. Thank you so much. So, looking back, it's been 7 years. What do you have a favorite guest? People ask me this all the time, and it's impossible for me to answer.
Yeah, it really is impossible because we talk to so many great people. I'm not sure if I have a favorite guest because it's hard to whittle it down. But I tell you, one of my favorite shows happened just in this last year, our seventh year here. The show that you did when you went on the Rainbow Warrior boat, the Greenpeace boat, and you talked to members of Greenpeace and the crew on the boat. I thought that was a really cool show, and I had a lot of fun doing editing on that show. So I think that may be my favorite here today. Ask me tomorrow, and it's going to be a different show.
Well, I hope to do more field reports like that, because I went out in the field to do that, went on the Rainbow Warrior when my brother was here, which was really cool for me. So, and again, you did a superb job of piecing that together. So.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, so I have a little...
And that is available, of course, as a podcast. So if people haven't heard that show, they should download it, because it was great. It was when the Rainbow Warrior was here in Seattle. So.
Yes, yes. And conversationslive.net is where you can find that. You can also... We are archived on KKNW,
1150kknw.com.
Yeah. But if you go to our website and look and just type in Rainbow Warrior, it will pop up. Do we have a search feature on KKNW?
I don't believe that we do, but...
played in October. I know that because my brother was
just
here.
Google Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and Greenpeace, and bam, it'll come up.
Yeah. So a few weeks ago...
Or Bing it. Sorry.
Bing it. A few weeks ago, I went up to Bellingham and interviewed a young man up there, and I'm going to do a field report on that pretty soon.
Great.
Trying to get him international exposure on that. So he's doing some great work, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. We'll talk about it at the time.
No spoilers.
No spoilers on that one. I just think he's an amazing kid, he's a young man. I must be getting old when I say I say stuff like that, you know.
That's he's not... just a kid. He's only 27 or whatever.
No,
I don't know.
47.
Wow.
No, he's not really. But anyway, looking back, it's impossible for me to pick out a favorite guest. We did focus on strong women today because today's show I did dedicate to my mama.
Right.
And... but I have a couple of clips we'll play next week from some of my favorite male guests, so they don't feel left out.
Good.
And I really do appreciate you. Everything you've done, can't say enough good things, and appreciate everything you have helped with over the past 7 years.
Thank you.
So I also want to thank everyone listening today and joining us. You can find out... all of the clips we played today, you can find out the full shows on conversationslive.net, and you can just go to the search box and you can type in the guest's name and it will pop up and you can hear the full podcast there. I'm just looking at the helicopters flying over here, or the planes flying over here. I realized the Blue Angels were supposed to fly over Seattle today and we're overlooking it, and I didn't see them fly by. Did you, Eric?
I didn't, but we are seeing these interesting seaplanes flying across now as we do it. So you never know what's going to happen here.
Yeah, very true. Well, thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Thanks for celebrating with us. We'll be back next week. And Susan Wicks, Pacific Northwest writer, will be live in the will be live on the phone with us. And she's going to talk about her new book, which she's a New York Times number one best-selling author, and critics are saying it's her best ever. So we'll hear more from her.
Once you hit that bestseller list, people got to call you that for the rest of your life, right?
For the rest of your life.
New York Times best-selling author.
Well, yeah.
That would be pretty cool.
It's quite an accomplishment.
It's almost like getting a knighthood or something.
There you go. Well, here's what I'll do for you. I will knight you. Sir Eric Ryder.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.